Good morning, I'm Anjanette Levy, and we are reading the latest issue of Oprah Magazine. This is the September issue that we're starting today. We'll start with the high five, a whole handful of things to cheer about this month. Great British send-off. If you thought Downton Abbey had exhausted every melodramatic plot point, a tryst turned deadly, amnesiacs and abandoned brides, a pesky telephone installation, think again. The big screen sequel features the Dowager Countess, Lady Mary, and the rest of the upstairs-downstairs crew preparing for royal guests, England's King and Queen. Shine the silver ring, the butler, and may God save the Crowleys. Street smarts. After his little brother's narrow miss with a speeding car, a safety-minded fifth grader, along with a friend in Medford, Massachusetts, proposed a better crosswalk inspired by similar ones in other cities. Painted to resemble a 3D roadblock, the optical illusion signals drivers to hit the brake. The innovative design was unveiled in April and has since popped up outside Medford's other elementary schools. Wise guys. Star Trek. Have telescope, will travel. Dark Skies is a guidebook for the curious astro tourist, filled with info on 35 stellar stargazing sites, from Iceland's Jökulsárlón Glacial Lake to Utah's Natural Bridges National Monument, plus tips for experiencing eclipses, auroras, and other celestial events. Your next dream vacation is written in the you-know-whats. Paper Trail. Machines might be able to fold laundry and grocery shop, but can they decode Susan B. Anthony's squiggly cursive? By the People is a crowdsourcing initiative from the Library of Congress in which citizen archivists can transcribe Clara Barton's diaries, Walt Whitman's poems, and thousands of other handwritten documents too indecipherable to be read by scanners. To help set the record straight, visit crowd.loc.gov. Supply chain. Taking a page from the Little Free Library playbook, Arkansas resident Jessica McClard launched the first Little Free Pantry in 2016 to provide non-perishable food like granola bars and hygiene products like toilet paper to neighbors having a hard week, month, or life. Now nearly 650 community-based cabinets have cropped up across the country from Oak Grove, Oregon to Chatham, Virginia. Learn how you can lend a helping hand at littlefreepantry.org. Make believe. One artist is sowing the seeds for a new kind of quilt. Bisa Butler is a quilting virtuoso. Just don't ask her to measure triangles for a star flower block. I admire what old school quilters do, says Butler, age 46, but if someone bursts out a ruler, I feel deeply uncomfortable. Instead of geometric patterns, Butler creates kaleidoscopic portraits of African Americans from historical giants like John Michael Basquiat or Josephine Baker to the captivating unknown. Many of her latest collages, a group of Harlem girls, each standing a little over 4 feet tall, an 1899 college basketball team, are based on archival black and white photos. Some have a generic title like Negro Boys on Easter Morning, says Butler, who lives in West Orange, New Jersey, and may spend 20 hours layering hundreds of silk pieces to create one hyper-realistic face. I bring them back to life in color. Every bit of fabric has symbolic impact. A swatch covered in euros signifies the cost of slavery. A ribbon printed with women standing face to face indicates sisterhood. The portraits are painterly because Butler herself was a painter. Most quilters tend to see things in chunks of color, she says. I still think in terms of layers and shadows. While she was studying fine art at Howard University, a professor noticed a disconnect between her muted paintings and her splashy wardrobe. Picture lime green honeycombs and red and blue swirls in one dress, and urged her to start incorporating fabric into her pieces. Now Butler, who has sewn since childhood, my mom and grandmother taught me so I could create Barbie outfits, works only with textiles. Butler's fabric collection swallows her dining room, fills 22 bins in her basement, and contains material both donated, like her mother's hijabs, and purchased. If I see something I like, I buy it, she says. I found a print called Michelle Obama's Shoes that commemorated a trip to Africa by President Obama and the First Lady, and I went H-A-M. I was like, Michelle Obama? I'll take it in all five colors. Change your world. For Jason Ward, hope was a thing with feathers. Jason Ward was 26 when he showed up to his first bird walk at Piedmont Park in Atlanta. I could recognize 30 to 40 species, and I thought I was a hotshot, says Ward, who's now 32. Nope. People were even calling things I'd never even heard of. Chimney swifts, fish crows, American redstarts. Ward vowed to do better. By day, he scanned documents for a mortgage firm. By night, he pored over field guides. 8 months after that initial walk, he did it again as its leader. The self-taught ornithologist is now the National Audubon Society's Community Relations and Outreach Director. You could hire someone with more credentials, he says. You won't find someone who cares more. Ward fell hard for birds in the midst of personal hardships. Between ages 14 and 19, he bounced around Bronx homeless shelters with his family. One day he witnessed something many people would look away from, a peregrine falcon feasting on a pigeon. For Ward, it was an epic scene, survival of the fittest, a creature of strength doing what had to be done in order to thrive. And at the end, the falcon did what Ward dreamed of doing himself. It took wing and left. Today, he's winging his way all over the country, filming a YouTube series called Birds of North America, and living out his childhood Steve Irwin meets Bill Nye fantasies. He's also welcoming avian lovers of color into a historically white space. Yes, birders come in every race, age, and sexual orientation, says Ward. And no, not all of us wear khaki shorts and smell like insect repellent. Flight information. Ward's wisdom for curious birders. Baby birds don't need help. They often leave the nest before they're able to fly and learn mostly by flopping around. Intervene and carefully place a bird out of reach only if there are stray cats or dogs around. There's no right way to go birding. There are some wrong ways. You want to enjoy the majesty of the bird's world without stressing them out. So refrain from getting too close or excessively playing bird songs on mobile devices to lure them. Of the more than 50 species of gull, none is a seagull. It's just a nickname we've given our favorite French fry pirates. Some gulls can be found nowhere near an ocean, preferring inland lakes and rivers. Don't knock pigeons. People call them rats with wings, but they can do somersaults in the air and are really fast. Pigeons are also amazing parents and can produce a white substance called crop milk. They are one of just three bird species that can do that. Pause and reflect. A pack of rescue dogs is saving the environment one sniff at a time. As a stray in a shelter, Ruger snapped at anyone who came near. But when the lab shepherd mix was given a toy, the rest of the world fell away. Megan Parker knew that single-minded concentration meant Ruger was teachable. She's a co-founder of Working Dogs for Conservation, a nonprofit that helps canines become detectives on behalf of wildlife and their habitats. After about 5 months of training, a typical session, smell a target scent like rhino horn, find that scent hidden inside a box or a vehicle, play fetch as a reward. The former naughty boy was deployed to Zambia as a firearms and ammunition scout. In one raid, Ruger helped find 15 guns intended to kill elephants that were stashed in hiding places like grain stores and a home's thatched roof. WD4C, established in Bozeman, Montana in 2000, also relies on dogs to track things like invasive weeds, which could decimate native plants, and droppings from endangered animals, which allows scientists to study them without stress or capture. Where do these hard workers come from? WD4C specifically recruits from shelters. There are 35 detection dogs currently in rotation, and Executive Director Peter Coppolillo wants to find more. Anyone can volunteer and screen dogs for our rescues to the rescue program, says Coppolillo. The process isn't too taxing. Simply play with a pup and take notes about its drive. You might discover a diamond in the rough. My Best Life by Naomi Osaka. Why we love her. For the quiet passion, the 21-year-old tennis pro ranked number 2 by the Women's Tennis Association at press time exudes on and off the field, or the court, rather. what she's up to. Returning to the U.S. Open tournament from August 26th to September 8th to defend her title. What she can't live without. Haitian food. I love legume, which is like a stew. You can make it with vegetables, beef, crab, whatever. My dad used to get it for our family when I was little and we lived in Florida. I've also had it in Haiti, where my dad is from. Legume is completely unique. You have to eat it to understand it. Universal Studios. I flew there with my sister in December just for the day, and it was totally worth it. We spent 10 hours going on every single ride, like Revenge of the Mummy, which is based on the movie and one of the best, and visiting Harry Potter World. I'm definitely a fan of roller coasters. The bigger and twistier, the better. My parents. I've tried to pick out the most positive traits from each and apply them to myself. I get a fighting spirit from my mom and more level-headedness from my dad. I'm not saying my mom is irrational, but, you know, she shows signs sometimes. Vacation. Okay, I've never actually taken one, but I plan to at the end of this year. I've been seeing lots of people post pictures of the Maldives, and I want to go. The World According to Gail. I love everything about this rainbow bright clutch. It's from Nina Shoes, and I bought it in June for Pride Month. I look forward to a time when we won't need a special month to honor the LGBTQ community. Until then, I'm going to carry my sparkly bag with, well, pride. It's $85, and you can find it at ninashoes.com. Tell me Lin-Manuel Miranda is involved in a project, and I'm there, in his electrifying new show, Freestyle Love Supreme, which I saw off-Broadway a few months ago. Miranda and company ask audience members to shout out at a random word or tell a little story. Then, based on the suggestions, the performers improvise clever and sometimes poignant raps on the fly. No exaggeration. I'd never seen anything like it. The Different Every Night musical begins Broadway previews September 13th. Miranda won't be in every show, but you can bet he's sprinkled his fairy dust all over it. Try. When you need a glitzy look and quick, who are you going to call? Glam Squad, which I think of as the Uber of professional hair and makeup services. Favorite daughter, Kirby, is a big fan. Newsflash, neither of us can do our own makeup, and introduced it to me when she came to New York for the Time 100 Gala. Kirby opened the app and scheduled an appointment, and a few hours later, the lovely Nicole showed up at my home and got to work in the kitchen. The hour-long session cost $75 plus $20 for eyelashes, which were worth it. Two thumbs up, Nicole. Watch. Compelling stories can inspire people to fight for a cause. That's why Global Citizen teamed up with famous people like Rachel Brosnahan and Pharrell Williams to create the new six-part docuseries, Activate. Each episode dives into an issue related to global extreme poverty, like girls' education and disaster relief. Starting September 5th on National Geographic, viewers in 172 countries will be able to see how they too can make a difference. C. I would never have pictured Renee Zellweger as Judy Garland, but the Oscar winner nails the role in Judy, out September 27th. The film chronicles some of the star's final performances, a sold-out run that opened in December 1968 at a London nightclub, and her offstage struggles, Me Too moments before we had Me Too, problems with alcohol and pills, and a never-ending search for love. At one point, a movie producer says to Judy, "It's your job to give those people dreams. I wish she'd been able to fulfill her own." Afromations. Since the 60s, the Afro has been a symbol of power, purpose, and pride. Now with the resurgence of the natural hair movement, the look is taking center stage again. Four women sporting fabulous fros share the deeply personal ways their iconic hairstyles continue to send a message. When I walk into a room with my afro, I'm taking up space as a black woman. I've earned that space. I claim that space. In November 2015, Ebony Davis had an awakening. After tapping into the natural hair community online, she decided to quit the relaxers. Some people in her work circle weren't happy. They said, "Your rolled out of bed hair isn't going to work," Davis recalls. "Clients aren't going to want to book you." Davis chose to ignore the warning, and within a month of going natural, she booked the biggest campaign of her career with Calvin Klein, in which she wore a resplendent fro. Her commitment to showing up in the way she feels most comfortable is the kind of authenticity the afro represents, says celebrity hairstylist Felicia Leatherwood. In today's fashion and beauty industries, the afro is not only accepted, but celebrated. Fros have more texture and definition now, Leatherwood notes. People are adorning them with headbands, faux flowers, and satin wraps. It's a beautiful thing to see. Danae Benton is an actress. "I try to always wear my hair natural on red carpets so black girls can feel represented." In high school, Danae Benton says, "I learned about Eurocentric beauty standards and black self-loathing, and it blew my mind. The idea of other young black girls feeling less than because of the images of beauty reflected back at them on television wasn't something Benton could abide." Her answer was proudly, unequivocally, to embrace her hair's natural texture. It's what the afro has been about for decades. During the 1960s, the style was a rejection of a traditional European look and a way to embrace one's African heritage, says Aliya Bundles, a hair historian, author, and great-great-granddaughter of hair care pioneer Madam C.J. Walker. It was about self-love and self-affirmation. Benton, who plays Eliza Hamilton in the Broadway production of Hamilton, which gloriously crossed racial boundaries by casting mostly people of color to play key figures in American history, now recognizes the magnitude of her decision to wear her hair natural. "Growing up, I hardly ever got to see a dark-skinned black woman with natural hair at the center of an incredible love story like this. The truth is, many young people who wear their hair natural are still marginalized today. In recent years, students sporting certain hairstyles, afros, braids, twists, and locks, have been targeted by school administrators. One young girl was even threatened with expulsion if she didn't cut off her hair, which was deemed a distraction to her classmates. Benton wants better for the next generation and thinks that as more prominent women wear their hair natural, perception will change. I hope tomorrow's 18-year-olds have an easier time." Marsha Cook, SVP Content Strategy and Community, Vice Media. "My fro gives me superpowers." It's been 15 years since Marsha Cook set aside silk presses and braids and began to adopt the style that has become her signature. But although she's in her happy hair space now, truly loving her texture took time. Despite little resistance from her colleagues and managers in corporate America, Cook still straightened her hair for events where she felt they would be better received. "I was hearing the voices of my traditional Jamaican parents," Cook says. "I think they saw straight hair as a ticket into the world they wanted for me." Rather than being celebrated, naturally textured hair has often been something women felt the need to hide in the workplace. "The afro in particular has always threatened the status quo," says Bundles. "For a very long time, it made corporations and white employers nervous about what they perceived as militancy. But that's starting to change. Earlier this year, the Creating a Respectful and Open World for Natural Hair, or CROWN Act, which prohibits employers and schools from discriminating against natural hairstyles, was enacted into California law. For more information, read about it below, which we will. As for Cook, she didn't truly understand her hair's impact until she moved into her role at Vice Media. Younger staffers will sometimes raise their fist or give her a round of applause when she walks through the office, and their voices give her hope that perceptions have changed since her parents' day. "Millennials come into my office and talk about my hair and really convey a sense of pride about who I am and what I've achieved as a member of senior management. That's a real evolution." Stand up for natural hair. You can help end bias based on hair texture and hairstyles by supporting the Crown Coalition. Co-founded by Dove, this alliance is working to outlaw hair discrimination in the workplace and in schools. You can visit thecrownact.com to sign the online petition and build momentum to pass the Crown Act nationwide. Rosemarie Ingleton, MD, dermatologist. My afro makes me feel free, light, and liberated. Dr. Rosemarie Ingleton has been rocking the TWA, teeny weeny afro, since the early 1990s, when she was one of only two women of color in her dermatology residency. Unexpectedly, the style has been a doctoring boon to Ingleton. Numerous patients have come to her for help with thinning hair, stemming from years of weave-wearing tight braids, dome dryers, hot combs, and flat irons. All of these techniques and tools can have long-term consequences, says New York City hairstylist Dickie, who styled all four women in this story. When patients dealing with those consequences come to Ingleton for her medical expertise, they discover she has even more to offer. They're asking me how to make the transition to wearing their hair in an afro like mine, says Ingleton. These conversations can be emotional because they deal with the psychology of why we do these things to our hair. But I am an optimist. I focus on what options are available, and I'm always so thrilled to share some of what I've got with people. Beauty Talk with Reese Witherspoon. The actor and face of Elizabeth Arden shares the treatment she and her friends love, the message she wants to send to young women, and her favorite skincare tip. For a lot of women, beauty is a bonding experience. Is that true for you? Answer: absolutely. Every Tuesday, I used to go with my grandma when she'd get her hair done by Mr. Ray in Nashville, and I would listen to the women gossip and talk about what made them feel beautiful. It was empowering. They would have these conversations and feel ready to face the world. Question: what are the products or treatments that your inner circle is buzzing about right now? Answer: facials. Microcurrent facials, cryofacials, they've been a big part of our conversations lately. I did a cryofacial, which uses below freezing temperatures to help stimulate collagen production, with New York City celebrity esthetician Georgia Louise, and it was amazing. My skin looked fabulous for 7 days. Question: what's the best beauty tip anyone ever shared with you? Answer: when I was 18 years old, a makeup artist on a movie I was doing told me to apply sunscreen twice a day. She said, "You're going to be on camera for the rest of your life, so you have to take care of your skin. Also, the more you sleep, the better you look. It might seem like fun to be out all night, but you'll look prettier if you stay home and go to bed." Question: for so long, beauty has been about making a woman look more alluring to a man. Does that notion need an update in our Me Too era? Answer: I like to think of makeup as a self-confidence tool that allows you to put yourself together in a way that you find aesthetically pleasing. I've never really worn makeup to attract people. I think beauty is self-expression. It's like painting. My daughter is an artist and makes beautiful paintings, and she has similar feelings about makeup. Question: speaking of your daughter, what do you think the message of beauty should be for girls today? Answer: for so many years, we've seen one standard of beauty reflected in the media, and I'm so glad my daughter's growing up in a moment when different women are expressing that they want to see themselves represented. And I think brands understand. Women are the ones buying the products, and we want to see all body types, all skin tones, and the entire spectrum of the female experience. Question: do you have any favorite budget beauty finds in skincare or makeup? Answer: Cetaphil face wash is very gentle and really great. I always travel with it. And the Revlon eyelash curler is fantastic. Question: which beauty products best express who you are today? Answer: I'm loving the new Elizabeth Arden White Tea collection of fragrances. The Vanilla Orchard is one of my favorites. It makes me feel very grown up. Question: do you think there's still an unfair amount of pressure put on women to appear a certain way as they age? Answer: look, when I started in this business, I was told that after 40, I wouldn't be working very much. Now I'm 43 and working more than I ever have. So I think the standards are changing. People have more options with streaming platforms and can choose what they want to see. And they're saying, those are the types of women I want to see. Data is democratizing. Feeling good. I was against vaccines, but not anymore. Three women talk about how they came to see life-saving immunizations in a new light. Most people get vaccinated against diseases like measles, mumps, pertussis, and influenza because they fear contracting a serious illness, and they trust the wisdom and competence of the medical community. But some believe the real threats are the vaccines themselves, and on this point, they don't trust the experts at all. We talked to three women who were once opposed to getting immunizations for themselves and their children, but eventually changed their minds. They shared their stories in an effort to create a more fruitful national dialogue about the importance of immunizations. Kate Glisson is 28 years old, and she's from Jacksonville, Florida. She's an exposure scientist and a new mother. While earning my bachelor's degree in environmental and public health, I worked at a wellness center where some practitioners would say negative things about modern medicine and that vaccines were unnecessary if you ate well, exercised, and took great care of yourself. One of them referred me to a website with a lot of anti-vaccine information. After reading it and articles it linked to, I too began to believe the conspiracy theories that said the shots could make you sick, drug makers were getting rich off worthless protection from minor diseases, and pro-vaccine research was rigged by Big Pharma. In graduate school, I took classes in topics like toxicology and risk assessment, and it became clear to me that I'd been looking at vaccinations from a purely emotional point of view, not a critical one. The clincher was working on my thesis. The process showed me what it takes to do a rigorous study and get it published in a peer-reviewed journal. Experts in the field carefully evaluate every aspect of your research and methodology and ensure that the information is valid and useful. It made me realize how wrong I was to have thought that peer-reviewed scholarly articles showing that vaccines are effective and safe were all rigged. It also taught me how flawed the anti-vaccination research was. Unsupported facts, unfounded conclusions, stats without objective sources, biased anecdotes. Today, I'm fully up to date on all my vaccinations, and I'm following the CDC recommendations for vaccinating my six-month-old daughter. When I think about how I used to go around saying that vaccines don't matter, I feel like I let my friends and family down. But I remind myself that at the time, I believed I was saving them from danger. I keep that in mind when talking to people who are anti-vaccine. I try to calmly share peer-reviewed, unbiased studies, and I point out when anti-scientific websites have conflict of interest. Many of the people behind these sites are making a profit from selling products such as supplements or natural remedies like oils or salves. Just the other day, a friend sent me a long article about why vaccines are dangerous. While being respectful toward her, I refuted the article line by line, providing solid scientific sources like data from the World Health Organization for each point. Even if my email doesn't convince her, I hope I planted a seed of doubt. And that'll do it for this week's issue of Oprah Magazine. I'm Anjanette Levy. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week, and we will see you back here next week.